This past week, I received an interesting study from a man up in Canada on the Passover. And, of course, here we are in February, and the Passover will soon be upon us. One thing that he did say in his study was a very good study, as a matter of fact. He talked about the 14th and 15th Passover, how some people seem to think they have to keep Passover at the end of the 14th instead of the beginning of the 14th. But one thing he wasn't quite sure of, and he said that in his study, he said, "I'm not really sure if Yahshua kept the Passover. Maybe he did, but I really can't prove it." Well, I've been studying that same thing, and I'd like to share that with you. I want to say, first of all, that in the research that I've been doing, I find out that there were two Passovers the time that Yahshua was on the earth. The last days that he was on the earth, there were actually two Passovers being kept at that time. And I hope that those that are on the video and be able to be on the broadcast will be able to follow along with what I'm about to say here, because it's gets kind of complicated, I think. But there were basically two different groups keeping the Passover at different times. One was the Sadducees, who were in control of temple worship, and that was their job. They made up the schedule for the worship. They're the ones that were comprised mainly the Sanhedrin, and they were the ones that acknowledged when the moon sightings were there, and they acknowledged when they would proclaim certain days to be the days of the new moon, when they had two or more witnesses proclaiming this truth. It was the Pharisees that changed some of the things and added laws and actually changed the time of worship. But we'll get to that. But I want to mention that in the Judaic Encyclopedia, volume 13, page 169, and it says here on page 169 that the Jews kept Passover with unleavened bread. They merged them together. So that means that Passover was kept a day late, and it was kept on the 15th. But anyway, we find that some of the Jews kept the Passover with the Pharisees, and some, I think we can prove, kept them also with the Sadducees. So we have the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The thing we have to remember is that in Exodus 12 and verse 14, it's Yahweh says, "This shall be for you a memorial. You shall keep a feast to Yahweh throughout your generations. You shall keep a feast forever." Excuse me. Now, in Numbers chapter 9, you find there that we are told that Passover is so important that if you can't keep it at the regular time, then you keep it in the second month. The point is, you keep it either one or the other, but if you're on a trip or unclean for any reason, you can keep it in the second month. Now, the problems we run into usually, excuse me, the problems you run into begin in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, it's very clear. In fact, during Passover week, we usually go through the various places where the Bible says the 14th is the Passover, the 15th is the feast. And there are many places like that. At least eight of them are very clear. They make no bones about it. But when you come to the New Testament, we have a problem. And I want you to turn with me to the book of Matthew, chapter 26. Now, you have to consider what we're looking at here. We're looking at a translation, which I believe originally was in the Hebrew. Then it went to the Greek. Then it went to the Latin. Then it went to English. So we are here with an English translation. But beginning here, I want you to notice here in chapter 26, beginning there with verse 1 and 2. Verse 1 says, "It came to pass when Yahshua had finished all these sayings, he said to his disciples, You know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be impaled. Now, if you have a study Bible, one that has some italics in there, really the words "the feast" should be in italics. The feast of. It should not be in there. It should not be there at all. It was added by the translators because for several reasons. Number one, most of the translators didn't like Jews. They wanted nothing to do with learning the Hebrew language. Most of them didn't know Hebrew, didn't know the feast of the Hebrews, didn't know anything about keeping the days or the Sabbath even. And they tried to do everything they could to separate themselves from the Jews. And so you find here that most of their translations are made from the Greek, the Septuagint. Now, if you read that second verse the way it should be read without the added words, which actually change the meaning of it, we read that Yahshua said, "You know that after 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be impaled." The feast stuff shouldn't be in there because Passover is not a feast. And that's a blatant error. And you'll find that this happens quite often. We do find that there are many times that these added words throw us off. People look at this second verse and they say, well, how can you have the feast of the Passover when the Savior is supposed to be impaled at that time? Because the feast begins on the 15th. So we have a problem if we try to fit those words in, the feast of, they don't belong there. They shouldn't be there. And a literal translation such as Green's will show that they are not there. Now move down to verse 17. Next we have more or less mistranslation that throws kind of a wrench into the works. Verse 17 says, "Now the first day of the feast of unleavened bread came the disciples to Yahshua, saying to him." Now we look at that, and the word the first, excuse me, is actually in the Greek is protos. It's number 4413, and it really doesn't necessarily mean the first. It actually means in Strong's Concordance, protos is listed as meaning foremost in time, place, and order. And it's translated in other places, before, beginning, best, or chief, or first of. So if we would read that with those thoughts in mind, saying that it was the beginning, and leave day out, because day doesn't belong there either. But it was at the beginning of unleavened bread. You have to leave out the feast of and leave that out. So it was beginning or the start of or prior to unleavened bread. The disciples came to Yahshua and asked, "Where should we go and prepare that you eat the Passover?" Notice Yahshua doesn't say, "Well, I'm not going to eat it, but you guys need it, so you go ahead and here's what you do." He didn't say that at all. But he told them, and they followed through with what he said and made ready the Passover. Let's go over to the, in fact, if you have a companion Bible note, verse 17 says, "The eating of the Passover took place on the 14th, and the 15th was the high Sabbath." Let's go over to the book of Mark. Mark, chapter 14. I hope you can follow through with this because some of these, I should have written it on the board, but I think we'll probably have something more for you a little later. In Mark chapter 14, we'll put in there at verse 12. Now here again, we have people that wrote the translation from the Hebrew. And we find that they do not know anything about the Feast of Tabernacles, don't know anything about Passover. And so verse 12 says, "And the first day of unleavened bread when they killed the Passover." Now anybody who's kept Passover and unleavened bread knows that there's something wrong here. The first day of unleavened bread is not the Passover. it is for us a time of unleavened bread. Now, if you take the word first, and again, you put foremost in there, or prior to, or just before the day of unleavened bread. Now, day, again, is another word that actually in the Greek is number 2250. It's hemera. Hemera is often translated as age or always. In fact, it actually means time, and it's, which is what it should be here. And it should read, before the time of unleavened bread, or the season of unleavened bread, when that week came along, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, where will you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover? Yahshua doesn't say anything about, well, I'm not going to eat the Passover. And as a matter of fact, you'll find that we can prove that he actually did. So let's move on down, because here we have the preparation for the Passover, which means that the disciples are going to have to get a lamb and have it sacrificed. Let's go over to the book of, what do we have next? Luke, I guess, huh? Luke 22. And in Luke 22, beginning there with verse 7, there we find, then came the day of unleavened bread. Now that word day, of course, could well be time. Then came the time, or the season of unleavened bread. But again, you have to remember that in this verse 7, that those that were there were not really aware of how Leviticus 23 was to be played out. It was a rehearsal, but they had never kept it, probably, and knew nothing about it. So verse 7 should say, then came the time of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed. And notice verse 8, and Yahshua sent Peter and John, saying, go and prepare us the Passover, that we may eat. And they said unto him, where will you that we prepare? Where are we going to keep this? That's the question. In verse 10, he says, well, when you come into the city, there will be a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he goes into. A man carrying a pitcher of water was not usually the case that you would see in that part of the country. At that time, usually the women were the ones who went to get the water. And verse 11, you shall say unto the good man of the house, the master says unto you, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? Well, that sounds pretty clear to me. Where am I going to eat it? That's what you say to the man carrying the water. And he shall show unto you a large upper room furnished. There, make ready. And by the way, I wanted to mention this. Notice that they are in an upper room. They are not at the temple. And they are not in a tent, and they're not getting ready to leave with the staff at their hand and their loins girded and their sandals on their feet, ready to run. Because the situation had changed once they were out of Egypt. They didn't have to do these things. We have people now, even now, saying you have to have a staff in your hand, you have to stand up when you eat it, because that's the way it was back there in Egypt. Well, we're talking here about Yahshua and how he did it. He didn't do it that way. You find out they were lying on benches, kind of in a cartwheel, and fully relaxed. Well, let's move on down here to, where are we? Verse 13. They went and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. So what did they do? They had to go and sacrifice an animal, didn't they? To make ready the Passover, because they are still going to keep the Old Testament Passover. And at the end of that, Yahshua is going to get up and introduce the emblems for his shed blood and his body. Let's continue now. They're still going to keep the Old Testament Passover. And when the hour was come, he sat down with his 12 apostles with him, and he said, with desire, I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Now, if he desires something, wants to do something, I would think he'd do it. You wouldn't have to argue about it. Verse 16, he says, "For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of Yahweh." So there we find that's exactly what he did, that he kept the Passover, old Passover, with them. But I want to move on here from Luke, and notice here, he does, verse 17, "He took the cup, gave thanks, and tells his disciples, divide it among yourselves." Verse 18, "I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of Yahweh shall come." And, and then he goes on to talk about that. Let's go over to the book of Matthew again. I want to reiterate. We have Yahshua eating the Passover. Now, let's go back to Matthew and notice here in chapter 26 what we find there. Does Yahshua eat the Passover? That's the question we're trying to determine here. In Matthew 26 and verse 21, "As they did eat, he said, Verily I say unto you, one of you shall betray me. And they were exceeding sorrowful and began to ask, Who is it? Who is it going to be? And he says, He that dippeth his hand with me in the dish." So you see, they usually had a mixture of raisins and nuts, and they dipped the unleavened bread in there and scooped it up like you'd eat potato chips today in a dip or something. So he was doing the same thing, and he's eating with me. "And that same shall betray me. And the Son of Man goeth as it is written of him, but woe unto him by which the Son of Man is betrayed. And then Judas, which betrayed him, said, Is it I? And Yahshua said in verse 25, You just said it. You said a mouthful, Judas. You're the one. And then here, the scholars have put this together, and they pretty much say at this time, Judas left. So that when Yahshua gave the unleavened bread and said, This is my body, then he gave the cup and said, This is my blood. By that time, Judas had left the group. He was no longer with them. I don't want to get into that now. It's kind of a lengthy thing to show you. But anyway, let's go to the book of John. John chapter 13. Because here we have a problem that some people contend that this was not the Passover. This was something else. But again, it's primarily because of the translation. John chapter 13. Notice here, in verse 1 it says, "Now, before the feast of the Passover." Now that word pro could mean prior to, just before, or in front of. "So before the feast of the Passover, when Yahshua knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father," and so on and so forth, that he knew that this is what he was going to do. In this 13th chapter again, I want you to move on down to verse 18. Again, he talks about Judas. "I speak not of you all. I know whom I have chosen, but that the scripture might be fulfilled. He that eats bread with me has lifted up his heel against me." So he's talking about eating bread. He's eating bread with me, he says. It's pretty clear that he is talking about sharing or having a meal with someone. And I guess that was the only point I wanted to make there. But I want to move on now to chapter 18. Because now we're getting into the problem. In chapter 18, we have in, excuse me a minute, beginning there in chapter 18, Peter is told he's going to deny him. But Joshua is taken prisoner now, and they led him from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment. And it was early. In fact, some of the scholars think it was probably around 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And they themselves went not in, that is, the Jews went not in to the judgment hall, lest they should defile or be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Now, this is proof that there were two Passovers in that area at that time. We have one where Joshua kept with his disciples. Then you also have this one where the Jews had not yet kept theirs, because they kept it, as the Pharisees do today, at the end of the 14th, and the 15th begins. You might find that kind of difficult, but actually, I want to read some proofs here that I ran across and have been kind of storing up here. I mentioned that the Judaica says on page 169, it says, the feast of Passover consists of two parts. Now, this is in the encyclopedia, and most Jews pay no attention to it. But it says the ceremony and the Passover ceremony and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, originally both parts existed separately, but at the beginning of the exile, that is when they were taken prisoner to Babylon, the two were combined. And they very clearly say that they combined the two of them, and they delayed Passover until the end of the 14th instead of the beginning. We also find in Erdman's Bible Dictionary, on page 1076, it says there, before A.D. 70, I hate to use that word A.D., it's Anno Domini, we actually usually use C.E., Common Era, instead of using that Domini. Anyway, in the year 70, the Jews followed Sadducean reckoning, which regulated the temple services. Afterwards, the Pharisaic system became norm. It is apparent from John 18:28 that the calendar kept by the Jewish leaders and the one used by Joshua and his disciples were not the same, as Passover was celebrated on different days. So we find here that there's this one here, and also if you have a companion Bible, the companion Bible has an interesting note. It says, it's on page 1517. It says the Jews' Passover under Ezra and Nehemiah. Oh, it says after the revival under Ezra and Nehemiah, corruption proceeded apace, and Yahweh found the nation as described in Malachi. Hence what were once the feasts of Yahweh are spoken of as what they had become, feasts of the Jews. And we'll get into that in a minute here, because I want to explain that the Jews didn't want to go in where there might be some Gentiles, because in Acts chapter 10, and I think it's verse 30, anyway, the Jews do not want to enter in where there might be Gentiles, especially when they are preparing to partake of the Passover. So they didn't want to go in. But we have the lesson here that actually Joshua had already partaken of the Passover. And after he had partaken of the Passover, you'll find then is when he showed to his disciples. Let's go back to Matthew 26 and kind of keep this in context. That after that point is when he gave them the broken the bread, and let's see, in chapter 26 and verse 26, as they were eating, now they were eating the Old Testament Passover, and Joshua took bread and blessed it and brake it, and he gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. Liddell and Scott said that this amounts to or signifies my body. And he also took the cup and gave thanks, gave it to them, saying, and said, drink you all of it. He didn't mean empty the cup. What he meant was, each one of you drink some of it. For this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. You'll notice that not once does Yahshua say the cup contains wine. He always says the fruit of the vine. He never says, take this wine. He never says that at all. And yet we know that in the book of John, he did have the wedding where he did change the water into wine. But there are other places we can look at too. Let's look at the, go back to the book of John again. What is interesting here, I was glad Brother Bob Bondurant talked about the book of John. John is unique in a couple things. Number one, he's the only one that mentions that the Jews had not partaken yet of the Passover. And yet Jews apparently had not partaken of it, and they were waiting to do that, but first they wanted to get rid of Yahshua. They were hoping to get him killed before that, but it didn't really happen exactly like they had anticipated. But the very time that they are partaking of the Passover emblem, excuse me, and by the way, the Passover itself, the Old Testament Passover, has no liquid, no drink with it. That is something new that Yahshua added, because the Jews had a custom of setting out four goblets of drink, and that was, well, there were four Elijah, really, and Yahshua apparently used one of those to give to his disciples. So that the addition of a drink to Passover was new with Yahshua. Excuse me. But I want to take you through the book of John and point out a few things. John is very, very precise. And he actually uses the phrase, the Passover of the Jews, several times, but not all the time. There are times when he calls it just the Passover. But it's interesting that he would talk about the Jewish Passover almost as if he's trying to give us a signal or tell us, hey, look, the Jews have their own way of keeping these things, and Yahweh's Passover is different. Let's turn to the second chapter of John. John chapter 2, and go down there to verse 22. Says, when Yahshua was risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said to them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Yahshua had said. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed on his name, and they saw the miracles which he did. This was simply called the Passover. Move on down to chapter 5. Well, wait a minute. I missed one here. Verse 13. I missed my note here. Verse 13 says, and the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Yahshua went up to Jerusalem. So it doesn't say here exactly what this means, but here we have the Jews' Passover. In verse 23, it's just called the feast. Okay, let's go to chapter 5 and verse 1. And here we have in chapter 5, again, there was a feast of the Jews. A feast of the Jews. And Yahshua went up to Jerusalem. Now it talks about the Bethesda and the five porches. Let's go to chapter 6. And notice here again in verse 4. It says, "And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. And when Yahshua lifted up his eyes and he saw a great company, they want to know, where are we going to buy bread that these may eat?" So it was, a lot of these things happened at the time of the Passover. And there were, I believe, three of them that most of the scholars admit take place during the time of the evangels. Let's go to chapter 7 and verse 2. And notice here again. "Now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was on at hand." I want to mention something here that scholars have questioned and wondered why this happened. Notice here in this, when it says the Feast of Tabernacles was at hand, the fall of the year. And in verse 3, "His brethren therefore say unto him, Depart hence and go into Judea, that your disciples may also see the works that you do. For there is no man that does anything in secret, and he himself sees to be known openly. If you would do these things, show yourself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him." And then they wanted him to go up, but he said, "My time is not yet come, but your time is already always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me, because I testify of it, and the works thereof are evil. Go you up to the feast," he tells his disciples. "Go ahead, go up there. I go not up unto this feast, for my time is not yet full come." Why did he delay himself? Later on, he does go up. Was there a day or two difference here that he wanted to take advantage of? Notice verse 10. "But when his brethren were gone up, then went he also up to the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret." Well, some scholars say they were already trying to kill him, and so he didn't want to be openly seen with them. So that is why he didn't go up there at that time. On the other hand, people say, well, that's funny. With all his power, you'd think that wouldn't bother him. He could take care of himself. Well, let's go over to the 11th chapter again and again see what we find here with verse 55. Verse 54 says that Yahshua had walked no more openly among the Jews, but went into a country nearest to the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples. And the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. And notice here in chapter 12, again, it just says simply, "Then Yahshua, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead." We move on to chapter 13. Again, it's before the feast of the Passover. And notice in this one, Yahshua doesn't call it, or it's not called the Feast of the Jews, but the Passover, and Yahshua here is partaking of it. So apparently it was not the same Passover that the Jews were keeping. At least it doesn't give us that indication. Over here in the 18th chapter, move over there at verse 39. Here we have the Pilate is having a trial there. And verse 38, he said he found no fault in Yahshua. And then he said, "But you have a custom that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Will you therefore I release you, the King of the Jews?" And they cried all again, saying, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now, Barabbas was a robber. Something interesting. When you understand that the word Barabbas means son of the father, the Jews were actually asking to have the son of the father released to them. And they don't know that they were asking for Yahshua. That's what they were asking for. That S on the end, of course, is a Greek nominative masculine singular. It should end in an A. But anyway, it's interesting here that they asked for Barabbas, the son of the father. And you might think, well, I think sometime I've shown this before, but a lot of people think this was a curse. This was a curse upon the Jews. They asked for the son of the father. Let's continue reading here. They plaited a crown of thorns, or they scourged Yahshua in verse 1. Verse 2, they plaited a crown of thorns, put it on his head. And verse 4, Pilate therefore went forth again, said to them, behold, I bring him forth to you, that you may know I find no fault in him. Pilate wanted to get rid of him. He found no fault. He didn't want to get blamed for the death of Yahshua. Then came Yahshua forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said unto them, behold the man. Ecce homo, it says in the Greek, I believe, or is that Latin? When the chief priests, therefore, and officers saw it, they cried out, saying, impale him, impale him. Pilate said unto them, take him and impale him. I find no fault in him. And the Jews said, we have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the son of Yahweh. And then Pilate said, and verse 9, he went to judgment hall and said unto Yahshua, from where are you? And he gave him no answer. And finally, Yahshua, he said, I could have you killed, or I could even release you in verse 10. He said, you could have no power at all if it weren't given to you from above. Anyway, in verse 14, again he takes him out. And verse 15, and he says, what shall I do with this man? What will I do with this Yahshua? And they said, well, I should impale your king. And they say, we have no king but Caesar, only Caesar. Then delivered he them unto them and impaled him. And they took Yahshua, and so on. And he put a sign over him, Yahshua of Nazareth, King of the Jews. I think some of the Messianic people say the sign that he put up actually spelled Yahweh's name. I haven't seen it, but I've heard this before and read the self same thing, that the sign they put over Yahshua's head, it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. In the Hebrew, his name was Yahweh. But anyway, my point is this, that Yahshua, you see, was the one that they impaled. And I want you to go back and notice in the book of Exodus, chapter 23, something interesting. Chapter 23, here we have the Moses coming down from the mount at the end of the chapter. And in verse 24, we have Moses talking about the different things that Yahweh told him to write down. He wrote them down. Then he said to the assembled Israelites, if they were willing to do whatever Yahweh said. And verse 3, they said, well, all the words which Yahweh has said, we will do. And he wrote the words of Yahweh, and they rose up early in the morning, built an altar and so on, according to the 12 tribes. And you'll notice here that they offered burnt offerings and so on. And Moses took the blood in verse 6 and put it in basins. Half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant that read in the audience of the people. And they said, all that Yahweh has said we will do and be obedient. Before, as you know, when Pilate was back there with Yahshua, he said, what will I do with this man? I should have read that. I didn't. Well, anyway, you know that they said, his blood be upon us and our children. And the people think that's a curse. But read what it says here. He sprinkled the blood of the covenant on the book and on the people. Verse 8. It was actually a covering of the Jews that were left there if they would accept Yahshua as their king, but they never did. A few of them did, but not very many. But notice verse 8, the blood, he took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, behold the blood of the covenant, which Yahweh hath made with you concerning all these words. Maybe that is why today, even today, we find that it was the Jews that kept the Old Testament that we still have, in spite of the persecution that they've had and the killing off and burning up of all their records and so on. Anything Hebrew was fair game when the Crusaders marched through, as you know. And they burned up everything, and any Jew was fair game, as were some of the Saracens or the Muslims. And that is the legacy that they've left us. But even today, we find that Yahshua, in talking to the woman at the well, he said salvation is of the Jews. Meant that he was from the tribe of Judah, and also the lessons that we're to learn are in the Old Testament. Even in the book of Romans, we find that Paul asked the question, who is a Jew? And what advantage is there to a Jew? In chapter 3, or what profit is there in circumcision? He says, much in every way, because unto them were committed the oracles of Yahweh. And that's where we have the Old Testament, where we have the law written, that we can go back and read it and find out how Yahshua kept the feast, the Passover, kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread with his disciples. And from the old, he transferred into the new and left us with the new emblems of the broken bread, the unleavened bread, I should say, that was broken and given to the disciples, and also the new one with the cup, the cup of the fruit of the vine, representing his body. May Yahweh bless you as we prepare for the coming Passover. Know that it'll be here before we know it. It always is. And we look forward to that time when we join together with other brethren of like faith and celebrate the great offering that Yahshua has given for all of us. May